Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. And this is Atlanta. The food, the wine, the entertainment, the lifestyle. This is Melinda Skelton's Atlanta Living.
Brought to you this hour by Marietta Plastic Surgery.
And welcome to Atlanta Living. I'm your host, Melinda Skelton. Well, one of our very own Atlanta chefs is going into battle. One of the 15 chefs from around the country for the title of King or Queen of American Seafood. So I have on the line with me Chef Gary Minnie from Il Giallo Osteria. Is that right, Gary?
That's correct. Il Giallo Restaurant in Sandy Springs.
Yes. How are you today?
Life is good. I'm actually in Isle Palms outside of Charleston right now, so I'm trying to find the best reception possible on the beach.
Oh, it's tough to be you. I'm sure you're going to find some great seafood down there.
Exactly. Again, we're just up the coast from the Georgia area where, you know, we'll be highlighting some of the Georgia seafood next week.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about this competition that you're about to enter.
It's a pretty exciting competition. There's chef representatives from the state of Alaska and Guam, as well as a lot of the southeast states are participating, and some of the fellow Yankee states are in there as well.
Yeah.
And it's, again, chefs from all around the country, and it's one chef per state. And I think it's 15 or actually 16 with a late joiner. And you have to highlight something that represents your state. And the most important part is sort of it's a seafood competition. And, you know, I'm sure Alaska and Guam will have some fun things. And
yeah.
Georgia, you know, we can either go with the mountains we have, or the coast of Georgia has some amazing seafood products as well. And that's, I decided to go that direction.
So what is going to be your signature recipe?
I'm doing a combination of a Georgia white shrimp where it's a very similar to a dish we've featured on the menu at Il Giallo, where it's more like a quick pickle. We're not you make a pickle batter or a recipe brine and put it up on the shelf in a mason jar. This is a quick pickle where you gently toast the shrimp to really show off the flavor. You want to boil them really hard, and you immediately go right from your protein liquid into a marinade of some citrus juices, a little olive oil, calabrese chili, and just a little fresh capers and shallots, and it really shows off the quality of Georgia white shrimp.
Wow!
And then go ahead. And we finish that with just a little charred scallion, watermelon salad, and another great seafood from Georgia is the Sepulveda Island clams. Where we take the clams and we'll gently steam those open, and we make a vinaigrette with the juices that you steam the clams open with, and have the clams in that vinaigrette as well.
That sounds delicious. Now, how did you get to this point? How were you chosen to compete?
Yeah, I believe they narrow it down to, lots of chefs apply to get into this competition. And hopefully my body of work got us to a point where, okay, this guy sounds interesting, so let's give him the nod as far as to represent Georgia in this competition. So it's an honor to be a part of it, and I definitely look forward to lots of variations. There's lots of talented chefs from around the country that are participating as well.
Yeah, I've just had the privilege to be on the Georgia coast the last couple of weeks in Jekyll and Sea Island, and had some amazing shrimp dishes. Georgia shrimp is fabulous.
I think flavor-wise, you can't beat it. And the big picture is definitely one of those sustainable seafood items. You can go to the stores and buy shrimp produced in certain eastern countries, and you don't know what it was preserved with, or this or that. Where if you're buying it just literally right on the coast of your state, you know, we get shrimp in every week. Just it's amazing quality shrimp, and that's something. It's sort of the right thing to do, because a lot of restaurants can call it in and buy some, if you want to call it suspect, if you want, you know, or some shrimp produced in another country far, far away from home. And you hopefully don't try to call it local, but you know, when we discuss local ingredients, you really can't beat Georgia white shrimp.
Now, let's talk about, you mentioned renewable, and let's talk about the James Beard Foundation Smart Catch Program that you're a part of.
Right. It's the James Beard Foundation. We've participated with and been a member for a long, long, long time. And my previous restaurant I was at was recognized as one of the best new restaurants in the country. And so they have different programs, and it's a great honor as far as being part of the James Beard Foundation. And you know, once a year they have what we call the Academy Awards for the hospitality world. And this has taken place in Chicago, where there's the James Beard Awards. And they have different initiatives, and they have, you know, what we're discussing now as far as trying to help individuals in restaurants just to be better, or you know, be more efficient in terms of the products that you're using, mm-hmm. focusing on local ingredients. You know, they're very good as far as discussing the carbon footprint of where things come from, and also just to have better yields. And there's more than one way to skin a cat or peel a carrot if you do that. And so they want to bring awareness to what you're bringing in and using as much as you can. So you're really minimizing the waste in restaurants and the hospitality industry.
I love that. Absolutely love that. Well, seafood for me, chef, is one of the hardest things to cook. And therefore, that's what I first order at restaurants, because I don't cook it a lot at home as a home cook. I overcook it every time because I want to make sure it's done. So I want to open up the phone lines to listeners if they're like me and have a terrible time cooking seafood. So maybe you can help us out help us out with tips on cooking seafood. So folks, if you have questions about your seafood woes cooking at home, give us a call at 404-872-0750. That's 404-872-0750. So chef, what would be the easiest thing for us to start with at home as far as cooking seafood? What would be a primary dish to start with?
Well, I believe the one of the most important parts is what you're buying. That's something I always tell friends that, you know, we have this conversation in a casual setting, and I would always say, befriend a chef. But you'll find a chef that you're friends with, and that they care about great seafood, and try to buy it from them. If you can't do that, try to find somebody that market, whether it's Whole Foods or some of the local markets, a Star Provisions mm-hmm. kind of environment, that they're bringing in great products. And you got to start. You can't really get a great product, a great end piece of fish, if you're buying something that's suspect. Okay. Number one, start locally. You have great Georgia trout. This time of year, off the coast of Georgia, in the southeast, you have a blackback flounder. Certain seasons for American red snapper, wild striped bass, certain times of year. So you want to find fish that are somewhat close to where we're at. Okay.
Okay.
Now that great invention of the airplane, we can still get great Alaskan halibut but that could have been swimming a day or two ago.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to start out with great products, number one, and then at home have a great set of a cookware. You know, it's very easy to use a nonstick pan for scallops or very lean fish, so you don't have to worry about sticking. The second part, make sure if you're sauteing a piece of fish, certain fish you can grill. I would not recommend grilling a flounder or a sole or a very delicate white flesh fish. Trouts, certain fish like a trout, like a salmon, snapper, you can eat the skin, and that's just the part we eat chicken. What's the best part of chicken? It's usually the skin. It's nice and crispy. So there's nothing wrong with eating skin on certain fish. That if you buy a skin on, usually you can eat it with that skin. And you want to season the fish really nice, and it's your choice. You know, chefs, sometimes we get a bad rep for, they season things too much salt. Salt brings out the flavor in food. Season seafood just before you would saute it. And there's different rubs. You know, at Il Giallo, we have a great, what we call Il Giallo spice, where it's a very light blend of smoked paprika, coriander, fennel, cumin, and you don't want to overpower with that. And you only use fish that can stand up to it. I like swordfish now on the menu, especially brand like this, the spice crusted swordfish where it's grilled. And whether it's a grill or saute pan, just make sure you get that pan nice and hot. Not burning your house down hot, but just to get a very light smoke when your oil just shimmers across your pan.
Okay.
That's the right temperature you want. And then you season your fish quite nicely, and then you put the fish in the pan, and make sure when you put the fish in the pan, let's say it's a fillet of snapper or a trout, you make sure you gently get as close to the pan as possible without burning yourself, and let the fish go in the pan gently. And the part close to you hits the pan first, and then you want the fish sort of, splashing away from you. You don't want to put a piece of fish 3 feet from the saute pan. There's usually hot oil wins in that situation, and you want to prevent that from happening. And gently put it in there and just sear it for about a minute, 2 minutes on each side. And all the flavor in seafood, in fish in general, comes from the amount of moisture in the fish or the seafood. The more you cook that piece of fish, the more moisture goes away. The more moisture goes away, the more flavor goes away. So it's critical at that point. You can always cook fish a little bit more. You can't go the other way.
Right. Okay. And, well, what oil are you using in the pan?
At Il Giallo, we use a blended olive oil where you have extra virgin olive oil and a canola oil base. You get the flavor of the extra virgin olive oil, and you also get the smoking point or the heating point of the canola oil. And save all your really, really nice extra virgin olive oils or your really dense, expensive oils for finishing oils, i.e. vinaigrettes or your pastas, or when your fish comes off, a little sprinkle of that, a little dash on top of that very end. When you cook with those extra virgin olive oils, they tend to have a lower smoking point. And you don't really want to burn the oil, have a bad flavor from cooking your oil too high. So you want some of a neutral oil for you when you're sauteing. If you're putting it on the grill, you can use a little bit of that extra virgin olive oil in regards to your marinade, your seasoning, and make sure that fish on the grill is nicely coated on all sides.
Okay, Chef, we're going to have to take a break here. You're starting to break up just a little bit. So while we're in the break, if you could find a great spot to be in, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more tips from Chef Gary Minnie. We'll be back right after this.
Now more of Belinda Skelton's Atlanta Living.
Thank you, Scott. Welcome back to Atlanta Living, where we have Chef Gary Minnie on the line from Il Giallo Osteria in Sandy Springs, and we are talking seafood. And, Chef, we've had somebody that would like you to go over that spice blend that you gave for fish briefly a moment ago.
Very good. We'd love to. And, again, this is something we use at Il Giallo on certain seafood preparations. And you start out with 2 tablespoons of good quality smoked paprika, and then 1 tablespoon of fennel seeds, 1 tablespoon of cumin seeds, and 1 tablespoon of coriander seeds. And you can lightly toast the buy them in the seed form, not finely ground. You buy them in the seed form, lightly toast them in the oven so it releases the oils, gets more fragrant, and then you put that in a spice grinder, or mortar and pestle, and you work all the spices together. And then when you're ready to season the fish, just put a little, your choice, use sea salt or kosher salt, either one works. Season the fish nice on both sides, put some of your spice mix on top after that, and you'll be good to go.
That sounds great. Well, what can folks do to watch you or keep up with how you do in the competition?
I believe our social media will keep everyone posted on when we start the competition and at the very end. I think it's a chopped style format where you have, or an Iron Chef style format, where you have 1 hour time-wise total to get your dish done. And, you know, it took a lot of we're still practicing the dish as we speak. So got to make sure they're judging a lot on the technical side, using the right products, cooking the products correctly, the technique, the flavor, the seasoning. There's lots of categories that they're judging with. So once, it starts, I believe, 10 o'clock in the morning and finish up, I forgot, about 2, because they alternate the chefs in. Every 10, 12 minutes is a new chef starting.
All right.
And then the closing ceremony is at 4 p.m.
All right. Well, Chef, we are pulling for you. Can't wait to hear how this turns out. You've been listening to Atlanta Living, only on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
This is News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. And this is Atlanta. The food, the wine, the entertainment, the lifestyle. This is Belinda Skelton's Atlanta Living.
Brought to you this hour by Marietta Plastic Surgery.
And welcome to Atlanta Living. I'm your host, Belinda Skelton. Happy relationships aren't a result of having a lot in common, as a lot of us think. It comes from a couple knowing how to address their core differences and the way that supports each other's and their partner's needs and dreams. Well, my guest of 40 years, the Gottmans, the Dr. Gottman, has studied what separates the masters of relationship from the disasters in a relationship. And he says it all comes down to 8 important topics that can make or break a relationship. And these topics are explored in the following dates, and dates meaning going out on a date. And Dr. John Gottman, thank you so much for joining us on the line.
Thanks for inviting me, Belinda.
And you've done extensive research in this, and you said that you are 90% credible in predicting whether a couple stays together or not.
Right, exactly. And, you know, part of what happens, Belinda, in relationships is that we tend to ignore the relationship and get focused on this long set of tasks that we have to get done in life. We focus on our kids, we focus on career, and we ignore romance and passion in the relationship. So these 8 dates were field tested with 300 couples, and they're not about confrontation. They're not about therapy. They're not about doing anything to fix the relationship. And they're not about arguing. They're about really having fun together and going very deep in exploring who our partner is and what's on our partner's heart and mind.
So you say that the algorithm of these online dating sites is really incorrect, that just because that we are swiping right and we match up, that's not where it ends.
That's right. So the algorithm, you know, on OkCupid or Match.com or any of these dating websites that where people are trying to really find a lifetime partner, they're trying to find love, they are really ineffective because they're matching us with people who are just like ourselves. And actually, we're not looking for our clone. We're looking for somebody who's really interesting and different from us. So then when we find somebody who's very different and we like that person, then we often make the mistake of trying to turn that partner into us.
Yes.
And then it spirals into negativity. So we were thinking, since you know, a lot of times in the beginning of a relationship, dating is kind of awkward. People don't know what to talk about.
I hate it.
Tense, they're nervous. Yeah. Most people say they hate dating. So we created these dates and field tested them. And these are questions that really open the heart, open the mind, so that you fire up curiosity in this person, and the conversations go very deep. They're not about confrontation; they're about exploration.
Okay,
and we're limited. Fun.
We're limited on time, but let's go through the dates as quickly as we can. On the first date, what do you think we should be discussing?
The first date really is about trust and commitment. So you're asking your partner, so tell me about your parents. How did they show or fail to show one another that they were trustworthy? How did they show one another or fail to show one another that they were committed, that this was the love of their life? And how do you want that to be in our relationship? You know, what does trust mean to you? And so that's what the first date is about. How can I show you that I'm trustworthy and committed to you?
Wow, that's pretty meaty for a first date.
Right. Right. And, you know, we're not thinking of this as the very first date, maybe
okay.
the very first date. You know, you're just kind of breaking the ice a little bit. But after a while, you might want to really sort of go deep. About 37% of our 300 couples that we tested this on were new relationships,
mm-hmm.
and 63% were really long-term couples. For both kinds of couples, these 8 dates really wound up rekindling connection and intimacy.
Oh, I'm definitely going to put these through the test with my relationship. Let's go into date number two.
So date number two is, you know, how is conflict handled in your family growing up? That's one of the questions.
Okay.
You know, what did you see with your parents? Did they do a good job? You know, did they never fight, or did they fight all the time? And, you know, what do you want conflict to be like between us? What's your ideal version of handling conflict? You know, so it's not getting at actually having a conflict. It's getting at, what do you need when we disagree?
Okay.
That's the second date.
That's so important in a relationship, as how you handle conflict, because conflict is going to arise.
Right, right. So what's your style, basically, is what that date is looking at.
Okay.
The third date is about sex and intimacy.
Woo, now we're talking.
So, right, so we're really asking people, you know, what turns them on and what turns them off, and we're really... You know, in a long-term relationship, you know, we're asking questions about, can you remember when it was really great between us, and what was that like, and, you know, how do we make that happen more often?
And these are things that can be discussed if you're in a new relationship, a 20-year-old relationship, or longer.
Right, that's right, exactly. So, you know, when we tried them out, you know, we started with 10 dates, and 2 of the dates were duds. They didn't work very well. And these 8, you know, we were able to fine-tune them as we talked to the couples who were going out on the dates, and we had webinars where we could talk to the couples so we could make them better and better as we tested them.
Okay, that makes total sense. Let's work our way down. We're on date number 4 now.
So date number 4 is about work and money.
Mm.
Now, you know, here we're not asking people to fight about money or argue about, you know, the budget or something like that. We're really asking them, well, what was the history of, in your family, with money? You know, what did your father do for a living? What did your mom do? And, you know, was that successful? Did that work? And, you know, how do you feel about money? How much money is enough money?
Yeah.
And, you know, what are we making money for? What's the point of it? What do you feel about your work? What do you wish for in work that you don't have? And so we're really getting at their underlying thinking about work and money, and, you know, and really sort of philosophically looking at work and money in that date.
You know, a study just came out from Wallet Hub that half of relationships that break up, those are breaking up because of money issues,
right,
and problems.
That's
between
right.
The couple.
Yeah. And I actually analyzed 900 arguments couples had about money in my laboratory. And, you know, people don't argue about money. They're really arguing about the underlying meaning of money. And I stopped at 100 meanings in these 900 arguments. You know, money can mean caring, love, safety, security, power, competence, justice, all kinds of meanings. And when couples really get down to talking about what money means and what they want it to mean in their relationship, then all those arguments about money really kind of go away.
Okay. Totally makes sense. Now we're on date number 5. We're working our way through the relationship.
That's right. So date number 5 is about family. So what was your family like growing up? Those are some of the questions.
Mm-hmm.
What did you love about your family? What did you hate about it? What's an ideal family like for you? And, you know, even for couples who decided not to have children, family can be really community. It can be friends. It can be creating a family. So what can we do to have the ideal family? And what does that look like? That's the 5th date.
Okay, and we're speaking with Dr. John Gottman. He is the author of 8 Dates, and it's how to make your relationship work and take it from the master of disasters to the master of relationships through 8 dates. And now we're on date number 6.
But date number 6 is about fun and play and adventure. So we're asking people about their bucket list. You know, what have been the greatest adventures you've had? You know, what is fun like for you? And, you know, people are really different about what fun means. For a lot of people, it's, you know, an adventure is fun. For some people, it's really kind of a peaceful time. For others, it's being silly. And then, you know, a lot of relationships, we find fun has come to die in the relationship. It's really, they neglect it. And, you know, 80% of couples starting therapy really say that they have no more fun with each other. So we want to really change that. And that's what the state is about.
Okay.
It's about exploring fun and adventure.
And that's where this book can come in really handy in older, more established relationships and can be very useful.
That's right.
Okay. Date number 7.
Date number 7 is about really what do you consider sacred and why? You know, what beliefs do you have that you want to pass on to our children? And, you know, this can be about religion. It can be about anything that you think is greater than just yourself. And it could be about the relationship being sacred. And what's that all about? What does sacred mean for you? What would you sacrifice for? And, you know, going beyond yourself. It could be spirituality. It could be religion. It could be just personal growth.
Okay. And these are essential conversations for a lifetime of love out of the book 8 Dates. And we come upon the last date for these essential conversations. What is the biggie, the date number 8?
Date number 8 is about your life dreams. So how do you want to be remembered when you're gone? You know, what dreams did you have for yourself as a child? And how have those dreams changed over time? You know, I know when I was a kid, I wanted to design spaceships and become an astronaut, you know, and then, you know, I found that, you know, that wasn't really that interesting to me being an engineer. Mm-hmm. I really want to understand people better. So my dreams changed a lot as I got older. And, you know, a lot of times people don't explore, you know, what is really essential in your life. And that's what this date is about.
Okay, these are wonderful things to take on your date with you. Keep in the back of your head as you're having these dates and going through your daily routine with that special someone to get a deeper, meaningful relationship that will hopefully be long-term. Dr. John Gottman and your wife, you've written a fabulous book that any relationship could be held useful in. Thank you so much for joining us on the line.
Thank you, Belinda, for inviting me.
Thank you, Dr. Gottman. And that is 8 Dates, the Essential Conversations for a Lifetime of Love, available in your local bookstores. You're listening to Atlanta Living, only on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Now more of Belinda Skelton's Atlanta Living.
Thank you, Scott. Welcome back to Atlanta Living. It is time for Breaking Chews. Now, this is where we drill down on all the up-to-the-minute breaking news about local chefs, festivals. I'm here with my foodie correspondent, David Danzig, of the website bitesandsights.net. Now, David, we have been eating for the last hour and a half some fantastic barbecue.
Yeah. You know, when we do the segment on the show, Restaurant Matchmaking, we occasionally get calls from listeners who tip us off to these great little kind of secret spots. And we got multiple calls about Smokin' Gold Barbecue in Lilburn. So I gassed up the car this morning. I headed up 85, and you know what? I struck gold.
You did.
Daniel and Lori Dieterle, they are barbecue nerds. They're an adorable couple. They started winning barbecue competitions a long time ago, kind of as a hobby, and now they have this Red Barn located on Lawrenceville Highway near Tucker, out in Lilburn. It's called Smokin' Gold Barbecue. The menu, their mission is to give a delightful barbecue experience you'll tell your friends and family about. So I'm doing that to all my friends and family here at WSB. So like most Georgia barbecue, it's not a specific style. It's a mix of all the greatest hits like Texas brisket, Chicago-style rib tips. They've got Kansas City burnt ends, and the sauces sort of range all around. They have a vinegar sauce reminiscent of the Carolinas. The meats are all amazing. And if you're a burnt end fan like me, you weren't even sure what you were eating.
No, yeah. I said, what is this?
Yeah.
And you said burnt ends. I said, I'm sold.
So burnt end is it comes from the point half of a smoked brisket. And a lot of chefs just kind of discard it. But if you know what you're doing, it turns into the smoky, crunchy, there's a caramelized, they call it the bark is on the outside. If you know what you're doing, to me, that is the best piece of the cow. So Daniel offers these large cubes of a burnt end brisket meat, and the bark is gorgeous. Right now, this is my blue ribbon for burnt ends in the whole city. So
it melts in your mouth.
It melts in your mouth. The sides are amazing. I've got some great photos at my website, bitesendsites.net. Smoking Gold Barbecue in Lilburn, Georgia. It's a worth a drive. I don't care where you live in the city.
Absolutely. I can't wait to see what you bring to the table next week. Stay tuned. Monica Perez is up next in the studio. Can't wait to see her smiling face.
Aww.
You're listening to Atlanta Living, only on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.